So our next speaker is a pretty well-known writer, but just as importantly, I think he's also a father. He's going to be telling a story with his sons, Jado and Jasper. Please welcome Craig Childs.
I do know what it's like to fall. I know what it's like to have all points of contact on a rock and have that split second, maybe a tenth of a second, where you feel one point after the next leave. And you go from that space of being solid to being in flight. And maybe you have enough time to say falling right as it happens, as if you just have to admit to yourself this is about to happen, that you're about to leave and you're about to be in the air. Or sometimes it's just a handhold that goes, or a foothold, and suddenly you're in motion, you're in flight. And you get to experience that difference between being in place and being in transit. But it's very different when somebody else falls. Maybe you could laugh at the right moment. if it's not too far. But then when you do see people fall, when it's not you, it's a very different experience. The time dilation that you experience is not for yourself. It's for someone else. When I had children, I grew a new nerve inside of my body that whenever I saw a child fall, I'd feel that nerve just pop, and it's somewhere between the diaphragm and just the pit of your groin, and it's like a thread, and it's not just your own children, it's any child. You see a child take a tumble on the playground, and I just feel that ding, just that little, I don't know what it is, but I didn't used to have it. I used to see children fall, and I go, oh, that's too bad, but now I just go, ah. And when it's your own child, it's even harder. It feels like a fist reaches down inside of you and grabs that nerve from your crotch and just yanks it.
So this is where our story begins. We were all three of us, plus a few other people, we were all on the coast of Southeast Alaska in a three-part trip. Each part was about a week, and then there was a week of transit. We were in the second part, a small island somewhere out there with one town with maybe the size of, like, Hotchkiss or something. It had two rental cars. We had one of them. It was a big minivan. And we were camped out in their park, which was not actually that different from the rest of the town called Wrangell on Wrangell Island. But it had this creek flowing through it, tall, tall trees, and these ravens that would fly back and forth between the branches, and I actually learned the dialect of the Alaskan ravens. But one of these trees over the creek, giant, giant tree, had fallen over some time ago, and it had just roots stretching up for so long and so deep under the ground that when it had fallen, it brought up this giant root ball, like 15 feet up in the air. It had fallen right over the creek, and I remember I was sitting on top. I had a spork and some peanut butter. A spork, which is a spoon and a fork together. Except mine was a spoon and a fork and a knife, a spork-ife. Not sure how it works, but it's double-sided. One side's a spoon, the other side's a fork and a knife. But I was just digging into the peanut butter, just eating it and eating it. And I remember Jado over here, I just remember watching him descend and climb down over the root ball. Then I heard, and then he falls, and I hear this splash, and I hear him go, ah! Just this, like, ah! Like, nothing bad. And then the water turns very bloody, and I'm like, oh, he hit his nose. He's got a really bad bloody nose now.
Here's what actually happened. there actually was no bloody nose. I was swinging on vines. Well, not really vines, they were roots, but I put all my weight on a small one, and it snapped, and, you know. Well, it was in flight, I guess you would call it, or like, fault. I time dilated, and if anybody here doesn't know what time dilation is, it's where your perception of time makes it everything slow down. Not actual time slowing down, just your perception of time. And so it seems like the world stopped. And so for me, everything just stopped moving, and I just thought to myself, oh God, you're falling into a rocky stream with sharp rocks into it, and head first. What trouble did you just get yourself into?
You worry about your children. You worry about where their socks are, about what they had for dinner, what classroom they're in, what kind of air they're breathing. You worry about so many things. And then there comes a moment where you are not worried about them at all, where you just become a tool, where you look up from fixing breakfast at a picnic table in the forest outside of Wrangell, Alaska, and you see your wife running to the stream. You see your older son 15 feet up in the root ball where they've been playing for, it seems like, 2 days, that's been their big castle, is getting up into the root ball. You see only him, and you see the other one is gone. That's when you just become a tool. That's when you run. I ran to the creek, and Reagan had gotten there and had turned him over and had Jado cupped above the water. And his forehead was opened wide. Flaps of skin pulled back. It looked like a door about the size of the door in a cuckoo clock, right in the middle of his forehead. And you could see for that moment the white of his skull. And everything was matted in gravel and needles, and it's just amazing how much blood was pumping out at that moment, and his eyes fluttering open, his face covered with creek water. And I ran back to my pack and opened it up and reached in, and the first aid kit was too far down in the pack, so I just grabbed, we had just done laundry in Wrangell, so I grabbed my stack of clean boxer shorts. And I ran back, and we folded the skin flaps back and put the compress of boxer shorts onto his forehead, and then ran from there, Reagan carrying him up to our minivan, which was this van that was stripped down to bare metal, and just jumped inside and raced into town. And I remember just taking it easy, don't go too fast. If there was more than blood, if the skull was opened up, I'd be hearing her from the back seat saying, "Step on it." But there was nothing like that. It was a beautiful, sunny day in Wrangell, which is kind of rare. And we pulled into the clinic and carried Jado into the clinic with all this bloody laundry and showed up for the nurses to then slide him onto the gurney.
Now, Wrangell had a very small population, so some people needed to take more than just one job. The doctor, he was like, how did you describe it?
Kind of like there was a mad scientist who decided to become a cowboy, but kept his lab coats and stuff, and he became a cowboy. That's what he would look like.
I think he was the judge, too. This guy walks in. He's just like, blustered hair. He's got this big leather vest on and these big clunky cowboy boots. And he's just stumbling in there, and he's like, oh God, okay, what do we have now? And actually about halfway through the whole operation, he puts on this big cowboy hat. Just need to mention that. Well, there was a long series of events that happened, And at one point during the operation on Jado's head, he fell asleep. Yeah, yeah. Not the doctor. No. Yeah.
That would have been bad.
Jado, not the doctor. No, Jado fell asleep. I remember the doctor, everything was cleaned out. He just had this big, just giant, like, Y on his head. Harry Potter has the lightning bolt Z or N thing. He has a Y. I'm just looking at that big open Y, then the doctor, with his cowboy hat on, he bends down and squints his eyes, and he takes these tweezers and just puts them in there, and he's like, "Hey, you guys like science, right?" So we all came over there, and we're like, "Yeah, what is it?" And he's like, "Look in the kid's head." And we looked in there, and he's like, "See this? This little thing? That's a blood vessel. That's just a chunk of flesh that shouldn't be in there. Get that out. That is a nerve. See that little white line? That's a nerve." And he grabs the nerve with the tweezers and plucks it, and Jado's arm just goes, tsk. He plucks it again. I just look down, and I feel like just grabbing the doctor's hand and moving it away. Just don't do that. Crazy, crazy doctor.
But for a while, I was doing just fine. I wasn't crying or anything. I was just telling myself, "Okay, you're calm. This is good. Yeah, yeah. At least they don't have a needle that they're gonna push into your head, because why would they do that?" And then I started to feel like, what if they do have a needle? And then I heard them talking about something that they called the hook. And I was like, "Oh God!" And then I look over there and I see him just pulling the syringe out, and I was like, "You should panic right now." And so I started just panicking. I was like, "Ah, ah!" And he brought it out, and I said, "Let me just ask you a question really quickly." And he was like, "Yes." And he would set it down, and then I would ask the question, and then he would pick it back up, and I would be like, "No, just wait, one more question." And I think I got away with it two or three times. And then I just said, "Wait, one more question." And he's like, "No more questions." And then he takes it and gives it. It was the anesthetic and stuff, so, yeah. It wasn't that fun.
At that moment, when he pulled out the syringe and he said, "Enough questions," and he went in after Jado's forehead with the needle, Jado went berserk. He started screaming and flailing. The nurses both came in. Two nurses on either side came in and held down his shoulders. And then Reagan put her hands on his chest, and I put my hands on his chest. And I realized there were four adults holding this one kid down just from the needle. The injury had nothing to do with this at all. He was terrified, and he was screaming. And as he screamed, his voice rattled every glass in that room, and I knew at that moment that he was going to be fine.
So, three things from this. One, bloody laundry is not something that you should put on. Two, it was a not so fun while it was happening, but in the end, it was a great story. And I can't remember what the third thing was. So, yeah. Thanks.
Hooray!